Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
God bless the great state of Wisconsin.
I don't know if the audience here knows it. I don't see any TVs here, but it has been projected by, I think, all of the networks that we won in Wisconsin.
Tonight is a turning point. It is a rallying cry. It is a call from the hardworking men and women of Wisconsin to the people of America. We have a choice, a real choice.
With our victory tonight in Wisconsin, we have now won 7 out of 8 of the last caucuses and primaries.
Either before Cleveland or at the convention in Cleveland, together we will win a majority of the delegates, and together we will beat Hillary Clinton in November.
You know, whatever happens from this point on, the 2016 political race begins today. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. In the post-war period, American presidential politics have moved away, slowly but surely, from party leadership-driven, opaque backroom procedures and deal-making, and towards the openness of the primary process. We cover it every 4 years. Voters decide candidates, and those choices get ratified at conventions, where decisions are largely scripted, controversy is avoided, and selling the candidates is the mission of the, let's face it, boring convention. Well, the Wisconsin primary this year seems to have revealed the limit to which voters are capable of choosing candidates in either party in 2016. First, the GOP. Ted Cruz beat frontrunner Donald Trump by 13 points. He won among women and men and in urban areas of Milwaukee, Green Bay, and Madison. In Donald Trump's view, the backroom dealing at the convention has already begun to take him down, even though he leads in delegates by far. This is what he said about Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is worse than a puppet. He is a Trojan horse being used by the party bosses attempting to steal the nomination from Mr. Trump. Ohio Governor John Kasich formally dubbed the Trojan horse, won 0 delegates with 14% of the vote. A disputed convention where the delegates themselves have the power to choose these candidates or any other compromise option is now likely for the Republicans. Less likely as a nominee, though, but still in play, Wisconsinites have given Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders a solid win on the Democratic side, winning 45 delegates to Hillary Clinton's 31. We'll talk about the implications of that for the Democrats in just a moment, but to tackle the identity conundrum that is now the Republican Party, we turn to David Frum, senior editor of The Atlantic and chairman of the Policy Exchange from 2001 to 2002. He was a speechwriter for President George W. Bush. Frum says this is suddenly Republican rugby between two groups who have been more politely at odds for nearly a generation.
Basically, you have a party elite which wants more immigration, big tax cuts, and an activist foreign policy. And you have a party base that wants to protect entitlements, less immigration, and a less activist foreign policy. Up to this point, the elite has largely gotten its way. But in 2016, the party base finally got an opportunity with this spectacular Trump candidacy to register a protest.
You know, one could say that about the Democratic Party, but it seems like the older Democrats are thinking progressive. The very younger Democrats are thinking progressive. There are party identities that are associated with specific policies, but then there's just this angry group that, you know, it's not necessarily associated with any particular policy. And that is what seems to be in flux in this political season.
Well, is that a surprise? I mean, we have now had 6 years of statistical economic recovery. The American economy today is bigger than it was in 2007. Total output is higher than it was in 2007. And if you look at the figures in the aggregate, the country's better off than it was at the last economic peak. And yet, the large majority of Americans, I'd venture probably about two-thirds, are worse off than they were in 2007. And they have seen all the gains of this economic expansion captured by a relative few. And by the way, who are capturing it, you know, aren't just the Koch brothers. There are a lot of people in the Democratic coalition who are also very satisfied, successful winners from this new era of, you know, free trade and massive migration and a globalized economy. But in both parties, there are lots of people who have not been winners. And that's who we're hearing from. And I think that's maybe the fundamental question on the ballot in 2016, which is how do you make the new economy of the United States work for enough people, more people, so that you don't have these eruptions of dissatisfaction?
Yeah, I take your point there, but statistically, it seems like it's so incremental. I mean, in past years, you know, the question of the Iran-Iraq war was making people very angry. The economic downturn of 2008 was a catastrophe, and then the months that succeeded it were even worse. You know, you had much worse conditions and specific issues to be angry about. That motivated the parties. I'm just surprised that there's so much anger, and yet the incremental dissatisfaction that individuals might be feeling seems relatively abstract.
I don't think it's surprising that they are more pessimistic and more anxious and more angry in 2016 than they were in 2012, when they could credibly hope, I haven't tasted it yet, but it's coming my way. In 2016, it's plain, it's not coming your way. If you haven't tasted it yet, it's not coming your way. And meanwhile, and this is where the immigration issue is so important, that we have four people on the Republican side, the sense of mass displacement, a cultural change that is coming that is going to make you and people like you less central to the country. And we have leaders all the time saying, hey, buddy, you used to be the majority. You're not anymore. Tough nuts to you. That, you know, we all celebrate that you are about to be you're about to have a loss of political power as well as economic security.
Well, that's the issue of if you're privileged, then equality feels like oppression, loss of
the... No, that's the feeling like if it's your country and somebody else moves in and displaces you. I mean, citizenship is not a privilege. That sentence you said just explains why this is so explosive. That from the point of view of people who would take a different view, what they are seeing is a violation of the basic social compact, a violation of the rules of equality where we are all citizens together. And that citizenship, Americanness, has now been defined as a privilege that some may, against the will of the majority and against the law, may share with others who weren't Americans in the first place and had no claim to be part of the political community.
Well, I understand that, but I just don't see white Americans having a legitimate claim to be angry against immigrants, undocumented aliens who are working, you know, at Denny's. That isn't necessarily the people who are coming in and taking my country away. Who then is the party of the angry whites? Is it going to be the Republicans or is it going to be the Democrats?
The Democrats are not going to be the party of the angry whites. They're going to be the party of upmarket whites and minorities. If you are an ordinary American, as most of us are, your Americanness is one of the most prized possessions you've got. When you feel like, hey, that the terms of that are being arbitrarily changed by powerful outside forces against the law, against my vote, you feel pretty alienated and disenfranchised and angry.
David Frum, senior editor at The Atlantic, chairman of the Policy Exchange from 2001 to 2002. He was a speechwriter for President George W. Bush. David, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.